A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants to talk dashboard cams in the context of Israeli driving culture, which he describes as, quote, kind of crazy. And honestly, anyone who's ever tried to merge onto the Ayalon at rush hour knows that's diplomatic language. The core question is, if you're getting a dash cam primarily for evidence, in case someone damages your car, what kind of storage setup are you looking for? Do you need both forward and rear-facing cameras? Can these things record while the car's parked and turned off? And what's the real concern about drawing down your battery? He wants to know what specs he should actually be looking for if this is the use case.
This is one of those topics where the practical reality and the marketing completely diverge. Most people walk into it thinking, I need a camera, and walk out realizing they actually needed a power management strategy and a storage endurance plan. The camera itself is almost the least interesting part of the equation.
The camera is the easy part.
So let's start with the thing Daniel's actually asking about, which is the evidence use case. In Israel specifically, this is not a theoretical concern. Insurance fraud via staged accidents. Someone backs into you at a light and then claims you rear-ended them is a known thing here. There was a whole wave of it, maybe 8 or 9 years back, that really drove dashcam adoption.
The driving culture piece matters because the question isn't, will something happen? It's, when something happens, how quickly can I prove I wasn't at fault? The dash cam isn't preventing accidents. It's preventing the secondary disaster of a disputed claim.
So let's talk storage first, because that's where most people get it wrong. The default assumption is, I'll stick in a big micro SD card and forget about it. That approach will fail you, and it will fail you at the worst possible moment. Here's why. Dash cams write constantly. Every minute you're driving, it's writing to the card. A typical high bitrate 4K dash cam writes somewhere around 400 to 500 megabytes per minute. An hour of driving is roughly 24 to 30 gigabytes. A 64 gig card gets you maybe 2.5 hours before it loops.
Looping means it's overwriting the oldest footage.
So if you get into an incident and don't pull the card immediately, and then you drive home for 40 minutes, that incident footage might already be gone by the time you think to check it.
The first spec question isn't resolution, it's card capacity and endurance.
The card type itself. Standard consumer micro SD cards are not designed for continuous ride cycling in a hot car. A dash cam in an Israeli summer, we're talking interior temperatures that can hit 70 degrees Celsius, maybe higher. Consumer cards will corrupt. You need a high-endurance card specifically rated for dash cam or surveillance use. Samsung Pro Endurance, SanDisk Max Endurance. These use different flash memory architectures designed for constant writing. A standard card might last 6 months in a dash cam before it fails silently. The endurance cards are rated for tens of thousands of hours.
Fails silently is doing a lot of work there. You think it's recording, the little light is blinking, and the card has been dead for 3 weeks.
You find out when you need the footage and there's nothing there. So storage rule. 1. High endurance micro SD, minimum 128 gigs, realistically 256. Rule 2. Format the card periodically. Once a month, just do it. Cards fragment, write performance degrades, and a format clears that.
What about cloud backup? Some of these cameras upload to your phone or to the cloud.
That's the higher end tier, and honestly, for the evidence use case, it's worth considering. Some models will automatically save incident footage, G-sensor-triggered events, to a phone app or cloud service. So even if the card fails, or the camera gets stolen or destroyed in the crash, you still have the critical clip. The trade-off is that it requires the camera to maintain a connection, usually through your phone, and that's battery drain on the phone side and another point of failure.
Let's talk about the forward versus rear question. Daniel specifically asked about this.
If the use case is evidence in an accident, you want both. A forward-only camera covers maybe 60% of incidents. It won't capture someone rear-ending you. Well, it captures that you were moving forward normally, which helps, but it doesn't capture the actual impact or the other driver's behavior leading up to it. A rear camera gives you that. It also covers parking lot hits from behind, which are incredibly common. Someone backs into your parked car and drives off, a rear camera with parking mode catches the plate.
There's also the motorcycle and scooter dimension in Israel. Lane splitting is constant. Scooters come from angles that a forward camera won't catch.
E-bikes now, which are fast, silent, and often ridden by people who treat traffic laws as optional suggestions. A rear camera gives you coverage of something coming up from behind and clipping your mirror or side panel.
Minimum viable setup for evidence is two-channel, front and rear. What about interior cameras?
That's more for rideshare drivers or people who want to document interactions with law enforcement. For pure accident evidence, interior isn't necessary. But I should mention, a lot of the three-channel systems add an interior camera, and they're not that much more expensive than two-channel now. The Viofo A229 Pro, for example, does three channels, and the image quality is genuinely excellent.
Storage for a two-channel system. You're writing two streams simultaneously. Does that double the data rate?
Not quite double, because the rear camera is usually lower resolution, typically 1080p while the front does 4K or 1440p, but you're still looking at maybe 500 to 600 megabytes per minute total. Your 128GB card now gives you maybe 2 hours of loop recording before it starts overwriting. 256GB gets you 4 to 5 hours. That's why I'd say 256 is the practical minimum for a two-channel setup if you drive regularly.
Far we've established that the storage spec is actually more important than the camera resolution, and that you want high endurance cards, and that forward only is insufficient. Let's get to the battery question, because this is where I think the most anxiety lives.
This is the part people worry about, and they're right to. A dash cam in parking mode is constantly drawing power. If it's hardwired to the car's electrical system, it will eventually drain the battery to the point where the car won't start. How quickly depends on the camera's power draw in parking mode, the capacity of your car battery, and the temperature.
Israeli summers are not kind to car batteries to begin with.
Heat kills lead-acid batteries faster than cold does. A typical car battery in this climate might last 2 to 3 years. Add a constant parasitic draw from a dash cam, and you're potentially shortening that further. So there are three solutions to this problem, and they scale in cost and sophistication.
Walk me through them.
First, the simplest. Don't use parking mode. The camera only runs when the car is on. You miss parking lot hits, but you have zero battery concerns. For someone who parks in a secure garage at home and in a monitored lot at work, this might be totally fine.
For street parking in Jerusalem or Tel Aviv, which is Daniel's reality, that's leaving a lot of coverage on the table.
So solution 2, a hardwire kit with a voltage cutoff. This is the most common setup. The camera is wired to the car's fuse box, and the hardwire kit has a little box that monitors battery voltage. When the battery drops below a set threshold, typically 11.8 or 12 volts, it cuts power to the camera. You configure that threshold. The trade-off is that you're still cycling your car battery, and lead-acid batteries don't love being partially discharged repeatedly. It accelerates wear. But for most people, this is the sweet spot of convenience and protection. A dedicated dash cam battery pack. This is a separate lithium iron phosphate battery that sits in your glove box or under a seat. The camera draws from this battery in parking mode, and the battery pack recharges from the car's alternator when you're driving. Completely isolates the car's starter battery. The best known options are from Blackview and Cellink. The Cellink Neo, for example, can run a two-channel dash cam in parking mode for something like 20 to 30 hours on a full charge, and it recharges in about 45 minutes of driving.
The car battery is never touched for parking mode at all.
And Li-4-4 batteries handle the heat much better than lead-acid, and they're designed for deep cycling. The downside is cost. These packs run $200 to $350, and you need somewhere to mount them. They're not huge, but they're not tiny either. Maybe the size of a thick paperback.
For someone who's worried about flat draw and doesn't want to think about voltage cutoffs and thresholds, that seems like the cleanest answer. Pay the money, install the battery pack, forget about it.
It's the set it and forget it solution. And I'd argue that if you're investing in a quality two-channel system, the battery pack is a reasonable additional expense. The whole setup, good camera, high endurance card, battery pack is maybe $600 to $700 installed. That's less than most insurance deductibles, and it pays for itself the first time it saves you from an at-fault determination you didn't deserve.
Let's talk about the camera specs themselves. If Daniel walked into a store or opened a website, what should he actually be looking for?
Resolution matters, but not in the way most people think. The spec sheet will say 4K, and that's great, but what you actually need is license plate legibility. A 4K camera with a mediocre sensor and poor dynamic range will give you a beautiful, crisp video of a license plate that's completely blown out by headlights at night. Conversely, a good 1440p camera with a quality Sony Starvis sensor will capture plates clearly in challenging light.
Sensor quality trumps resolution numbers.
The Sony Starvis 2 sensor, that's the IMX678, is currently the gold standard. It's in the Viafo A229 Pro, the Viafo A119 Mini 2, and a few others. The low light performance is substantially better than previous generations. If you see Starvis 2 in the spec sheet, that's a strong signal.
What about frame rate? 60 frames per second versus 30.
60 frames per second helps with motion blur, especially at highway speeds. If a car is moving fast across your field of view, 60 frames per second gives you twice as many frames where the plate might be legible. But it also doubles your data rate, which means more storage consumed. For most people, 30 frames per second is fine, especially with a good sensor. I'd prioritize sensor quality over frame rate if I had to choose.
The form factor. There are mirror-mounted ones, suction cup ones, adhesive ones.
Adhesive mount, low profile, tucked behind the rearview mirror. You want the camera to be invisible from the driver's seat. Suction cups fail in heat. The suction gives way, the camera drops, and if it happens while you're driving, it's a distraction and potentially dangerous. Adhesive pads using 3M BHB tape are much more reliable in high heat. For the rear camera, same thing. Small adhesive mount, cable tucked into the headliner, and door seals.
The mirror-mounted ones that strap over your existing rearview mirror?
I'm not a fan. They're bulkier, they often have mediocre cameras, and they turn your rearview mirror into a screen, which means you lose the optical mirror for actually seeing behind you. The screen adds glare at night. Some of them work as mirrors when the screen is off, but the reflectivity is never as good as a real mirror. It's a solution looking for a problem, in my view.
We've got sensor quality, adhesive mounting, dual channel, high endurance storage, and a battery management strategy. What about the things nobody tells you?
The cable routing is the hidden pain. A two-channel system means running a cable from the front camera to the rear camera, and that cable has to go through the headliner, around airbag deployment zones. You do not want a cable crossing in front of a curtain airbag, and through the rubber boot that connects the car body to the hatch or trunk lid. In a hatchback or SUV, that boot is a nightmare. It's a flexible rubber tube full of existing wiring, and you're trying to fish a USB cable through it.
This is the part where people pay for professional installation.
Professional installation for a two-channel dash cam with a hardwire kit runs maybe $200 to $300 in Israel, and it's worth every shekel. A clean install means no dangling wires, no airbag interference, and the power is properly fused. I've seen DIY installs where people just shove the cable into the A-pillar trim without realizing the airbag is behind there. In a side impact, that cable becomes a projectile, or it interferes with airbag deployment. It's dangerous.
That's the kind of thing where you don't know you got it wrong until the moment you really needed it to be right.
And on the subject of things nobody tells you, check your car's OBD port behavior. Some hardwire kits use the OBD port for power instead of the fuse box. The problem is that on certain cars, the OBD port stays live even when the voltage cutoff triggers, or it doesn't provide clean switched power, or it interferes with the car's CAN bus communication. There are forum threads full of people whose cars threw error codes because a dash cam was pulling power through the OBD port in ways the car's computer didn't expect.
Cars are hostile computers, as we've discussed.
They really are. The fuse box hardwire is more work, but it's the safer path. Use fuse taps, match the fuse ratings, and pick a circuit that's switched with the ignition for the main power and one that's always live for the parking mode wire, if you're doing a three-wire setup.
Let's circle back to the Israeli context specifically, because Daniel mentioned the driving culture as the reason he avoids driving. Is a dash cam actually useful if you're not driving much?
If the car is parked on the street most of the time, parking mode becomes more important than driving recording. That shifts the priority toward power management. A battery pack becomes almost essential, and toward parking mode features like motion detection and impact detection.
A camera sitting in a parked car in August in Jerusalem is essentially baking in an oven.
This is where capacitor-based cameras win over battery-based ones. Most quality dash cams now use supercapacitors instead of lithium batteries for their internal power. The internal battery is only there to save the last file when power is cut and to keep the clock running. Lithium batteries swell and fail in high heat. Supercapacitors handle it much better. If you see a dash cam spec that says supercapacitor, that's what you want for this climate. If it has a built-in lithium battery, assume it'll fail within 2 summers.
Are there specific models you'd point to for this use case? Evidence-focused, heat-tolerant, dual-channel, good parking mode?
The Veofo A229 Pro is probably the current benchmark for image quality at a reasonable price. We're talking around $300 for the 2-channel version. Starbus 2, sensors front and rear, supercapacitor, good parking mode with buffered recording so it captures a few seconds before the trigger event. The ThinkWear U3000 is another strong option, slightly more expensive but has built-in radar for parking mode, which uses less power than motion detection. Blackview has the DR97iX, which is well-regarded but pricier, and the cloud features require a subscription.
Buffered parking mode. Explain that.
Without buffering, the camera wakes up when it detects an impact and starts recording. By the time it's recording, the car that hit you is already driving away and you might not get the plate. With buffered recording, the camera is constantly buffering a few seconds of video to memory without writing to the card. When an impact triggers it, it saves the buffer plus the subsequent footage. So you get the impact itself and the moments before it, which is often where the plate is visible.
That seems non-negotiable for the parking mode use case.
I'd say it's essential. Without it, parking mode is mostly useful for documenting damage after the fact, not for identifying who did it.
What about the legal dimension? Is dashcam footage admissible in Israeli insurance claims in courts?
Israeli courts generally admit dashcam footage as evidence, and insurance companies here actively encourage it. Some insurers offer discounts if you have a dash cam installed, though it's not as common here as in some other markets. The bigger point is that in a disputed claim, your word against theirs. Video evidence essentially ends the dispute. Insurance adjusters don't want to argue about who was at fault when there's clear footage. It saves them time and legal costs.
Which is why the storage reliability matters so much. All of this is moot if the footage isn't there when you need it.
That's the thread that ties this whole conversation together. The camera specs are secondary to the reliability of the whole system. A cheap camera with a good card, clean power, and proper installation will serve you better than an expensive camera with a failing card and janky wiring.
Let's talk about audio. Do you want the camera recording audio inside the cabin?
For evidence purposes, yes, with a caveat. Audio captures things like the sound of an impact, screeching tires, horns, all of which add context. It can also capture you saying a license plate number out loud if you see it, but the camera doesn't catch it clearly. The caveat is that in Israel, recording conversations inside your car without the knowledge of passengers could raise privacy questions. If you're regularly driving with passengers who aren't family, you might want to be able to toggle audio off easily. Most cameras have a one-button mute.
The microphone quality on these things?
It'll pick up voices in the cabin and loud external sounds. Don't expect podcast quality audio.
So to summarize the spec sheet Daniel should be looking for, dual channel, Starvis 2 sensor, supercapacitor, buffered parking mode, adhesive mount, high endurance micro SD of at least 256 gigs, and either a hardwire kit with voltage cutoff or a dedicated battery pack.
I cannot stress that enough. The best camera in the world is useless if the cable routing interferes with your airbags or the power connection is unreliable.
What about the Wi-Fi and app experience? Is that a differentiator worth caring about?
It matters more than you'd think because it determines how easily you can pull footage off the camera. Most cameras create their own Wi-Fi hotspot that you connect to with your phone. Some apps are well designed and let you browse and download clips quickly. Others are slow, crash-prone, and make you want to throw your phone out the window. Veofo's app has historically been mediocre, but has improved. Blackview's is better. ThinkWare's is fine. The Wirecutter piece I was reading noted that app quality varies wildly and is worth checking before buying.
Check the App Store reviews for the companion app, not just the camera reviews.
A camera with great hardware and terrible software is a frustration you'll experience every time you need to access footage, and the moment you need footage is already stressful enough.
There's one more angle I want to explore. Daniel mentioned he avoids driving because of the driving culture here. Is there an argument that having a dash cam actually changes your own driving behavior, makes you more aware, maybe more cautious, because you know everything is being recorded?
There's some evidence for that. Fleet operators who install dash cams consistently report that their drivers become more careful, fewer heartbreaking events, fewer speeding incidents. Knowing you're being recorded creates accountability, even if you're the only one who ever sees the footage. It's a kind of self-surveillance that nudges behavior.
The panopticon on your dashboard.
In the most benign sense. But there's also the flip side. Some people become more anxious because they're constantly aware that every minor mistake is being documented. If you're already an anxious driver, a dash cam might amplify that.
For someone who avoids driving because of the culture, I could see it cutting either way. Either the camera provides a sense of protection that reduces anxiety, or it adds another layer of hypervigilance.
It probably depends on the person. I'd lean toward the protective effect, knowing that if something happens, you have evidence, and you're not going to be stuck in a he said, she said situation with an aggressive driver. That removes a specific anxiety that's very real in Israeli driving culture.
The fear isn't just of accidents, it's of the confrontation after the accident.
And in Israel, those confrontations can be having a camera that's visibly recording, and I think visibility matters here, can actually de-escalate. If the other driver knows they're being recorded, they're less likely to make false claims or become aggressive.
You'd recommend a camera that's visible, not hidden.
For the evidence use case, yes. A small, discreet camera behind the mirror is fine, but I wouldn't go out of my way to hide it entirely. The deterrent effect has real value. Some cameras have a small screen that shows the live feed, and that can be useful for demonstrating to someone at the scene that yes, this is recording, yes, we have footage.
The screen also helps with aiming the camera during installation.
Though honestly, once it's aimed, you'll probably never look at the screen again. Most people set it and forget it. The screen is a slight power draw and a slight heat source. Some of the higher-end models have removed the screen entirely and rely entirely on the app for setup. I think that's actually the better approach for longevity.
What about GPS? Some cameras embed GPS data, speed, location, into the footage.
It's a double-edged sword. GPS data proves exactly where you were and how fast you were going. That's great if you weren't speeding. If you were going 5 kilometers over the limit and someone runs a red light and hits you, the GPS data now documents your speeding, which the other party's insurance could use to assign partial fault. In Israel, contributory negligence is a thing. If you are even partially at fault, your compensation can be reduced.
GPS is useful until it's incriminating.
Which is why most cameras let you toggle whether speed data is embedded in the footage. I'd leave location data on. That's useful for proving where an incident happened, but think carefully about speed overlay. Some people want it off by default.
That's a useful piece of advice that I don't think most buyers consider.
Nobody thinks about it until their own footage is used against them. It's rare, but it happens.
All right, let's pull this together. If someone wants a dash cam for evidence in Israel's driving environment, the shopping list is dual channel front and rear, Starvis 2 sensor, supercapacitor, buffered parking mode, high endurance micro SD at 256 gigs minimum, hardwire kit with voltage cutoff or dedicated battery pack, adhesive mounting, professional installation, and a careful decision about GPS speed overlay. Anything I'm missing?
If you get glare off your dashboard reflecting in the windshield and in Israeli sun, you will a circular polarizing filter on the lens cuts that reflection significantly. Most of the better cameras either include one or sell one as an accessory. It's a $10 addition that dramatically improves image clarity.
What about the thing where the camera mount vibrates and the footage gets wobbly?
That's usually a mount stability issue. The adhesive mounts with a solid short arm are best. Ball joint mounts can loosen over time with heat cycles. If the footage gets shaky, check the mount first. It's almost never the camera itself.
We've covered storage, cameras, power, installation, legal considerations, and the psychological dimension. I feel like Daniel's question was deceptively simple, and the answer turned out to be a whole system design problem.
That's dash cams in a nutshell. The camera is a commodity. The system around it, power, storage, mounting, installation, is what determines whether it actually works when you need it. Most people buy a camera, stick it on the windshield with the included suction cup, plug it into the 12-volt socket, and call it done. That setup will fail in some way within a year, and they won't know until the moment of truth.
The 12-volt socket approach especially. That means the camera only runs when the car is on, and you've got a cable dangling across the dashboard.
In many cars, the 12-volt socket stays live for a few minutes after the car is off, then cuts power. So the camera might keep recording briefly, then shut down. It works, but it's the bare minimum, and it leaves parking mode completely off the table.
Which, for someone whose car is parked on the street, is leaving a major vulnerability unaddressed.
Street parking is where the majority of hit-and-run damage happens. Someone clips your bumper trying to parallel park, or opens their door into your panel, or a scooter squeezes past and scrapes your mirror. Without parking mode, you'll come back to damage and have zero recourse.
That's the exact scenario Daniel's trying to protect against.
To directly answer the prompt's core question, what kind of spec should he be seeking? I'd say, don't optimize for resolution or features, optimize for reliability and coverage. Dual channel, high endurance storage, proper power management with parking mode, professional install, that's the spec. Everything else is secondary.
It's almost like the spec is less about the camera and more about the failure modes you're designing against.
You're not buying a camera, you're buying an evidence system. The system has to survive heat, vibration, power fluctuations, and continuous right cycling for years. The camera is just one component.
The dash cam is the glockenspiel of automotive accountability. Small, specific, and when it plays the right note at the right time, it saves you thousands.
That's a very corny way of putting it, but yes.
I've been practicing.
One more thing worth mentioning. Check your insurance policy. Some Israeli insurers have specific language about dash cams. A few require you to inform them if you have one installed. Most don't, but it's worth a quick call. And if you're in an accident, don't announce that you have footage immediately. Let the other driver give their version first. If they lie and then you produce footage contradicting them, that's far more powerful than showing your hand up front.
That's tactical. I like it.
It's not about being sneaky, it's about not giving the other party the opportunity to tailor their story to the footage. Let them commit to a version of events, then let the video do the work.
The dash cam is also a lie detector in a sense.
An unintentional one, but yes. And in a driving culture where post-accident honesty is not exactly a cultural value, that's worth a lot.
All right. I think we've covered this from every angle that matters. The prompt asked about storage, forward versus rear, parking recording, battery draw, and specs. We've hit all of those, and then some.
The only thing I'd add is, don't overthink the camera model. Pick one of the three I mentioned, Viofo, ThinkWare, Blackview, in your budget range, and spend the mental energy on the installation and power setup. That's where the reliability comes from.
Format your card monthly.
Format your card monthly. Set a calendar reminder.
The most boring advice is often the most important.
That should be the show's tagline.
We already have a tagline. I assume we do. We've done 200 episodes.
We've never had a tagline.
That can't be right.
We'll table this.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1880s, Inuit women in what is now Nunavut used a dye made from the boiled bark of the Arctic willow to produce a rich, reddish-brown pigment for decorating sealskin clothing, a color-fast process that worked even in the region's extreme cold.
Right. To wrap this up, the question that lingers for me is whether dash cams will eventually become standard equipment, factory installed, the way backup cameras did. Once the hardware is cheap enough and the regulatory pressure is there, it seems inevitable. And that changes the whole dynamic. Everyone knows everyone is recording all the time.
Some manufacturers are already moving that direction. Tesla uses its autopilot cameras as Sentry Mode dash cams. Other automakers are adding built-in recording as a subscription feature, which I find irritating but predictable. The car as a subscription platform is a whole other conversation.
That's for another episode. For now, thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you've got a dash cam story, a save, a fail, a particularly egregious piece of footage, we'd love to hear it. Drop us a line through the website.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.